Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. The National Aeronautics and Space Administration, otherwise known as NASA, is a leader in technology and also dedicated to disabled hiring and inclusion.
We'll speak with Kenneth Silberman and Dr. Evelina Felicite Maurice from the Education Department at NASA about internships, fellowships, and other employment opportunities they have for high school, college, and graduate students, as well as professionals. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Ken and Evelina.
Well, as far as applying for internships, this goes for jobs too. I would tell people to gear your application towards the job you're looking for. A lot of people want to sit there and go how great they are at this and that and that. But if the hiring person isn't interested in what you're doing, then it doesn't matter how great you are. They want to know what you can do for them. They don't want to know what you can do.
In the essay part that they have to fill out in the application process, they should show their passion, whatever that is, because it's important to scientists and engineers and other mentors that we have that they can see what you're all about, not only academically, but also where you're going with that passion that you could have. It could be the sciences, it could be the engineering, it could be our outreach, web development, whatever it is. Show your passion.
So if a kid's in a computer club or something of that nature, or an astronomy club, that stuff should go up there too. I would also say that make sure that you get a good general education, because reading and writing is so important. If you're great at science and math and you can't communicate it, you're going to have trouble down the road. So a lot of times people forget the literature and English and the language side of things.
Oh, thank you. That is great advice for anybody wanting to enter any field.
And if you do have a passion for the sciences, or if you just think you might be interested in the sciences and want to know what kind of opportunities are out there, you might want to check out some of the episodes of Eyes on Success we've done talking about employment opportunities and research in the sciences. Just go to our website at www.eyesonsuccess.net, and in the search field, type employment or science or STEM, STEM, and you can find lots of episodes where we've talked with professionals with careers in sciences about employment opportunities for the visually impaired.
So as Pete said, we've done a number of episodes with people who have a wide variety of careers, many of them in the sciences, but many of them in other fields as well. But in particular, you might be interested in some of the episodes we've done where people have given tips for finding a job, on AFB Career Connect, on employment issues for the visually impaired, on education in the sciences for the visually impaired, and you will find all of those using that search tool.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. Let's start by meeting Ken and Evelina and learning a little bit about NASA in general before we get into their employment programs.
I'm Ken Silberman. I'm a blind engineer at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and a member of the Office of Education staff.
Your signature on your email says you're also a licensed patent attorney. Do you do that for NASA as well?
I did at one time. I'm not currently doing that. I wanted to come to the education office and help out students with disabilities pursue their dreams in STEM careers, because so many students are discouraged, thinking that if you're blind, you can't engage in a science and technology career.
I'm Dr. Evelina Felicite Maurice. I'm a linguist, and I work here at NASA Goddard in the education office as a STEM educator, professional development specialist, and a researcher.
Do you also have a visual impairment?
No, I don't.
We want to talk a little bit later on about these internships that NASA offers for students of almost all ages and some of the opportunities available at NASA. But, you know, when people talk about NASA, they think about landing on the moon and running rovers around Mars, but you're actually involved in a lot of other interesting activities. Can you give us a summary of what other things NASA does?
Well, yeah. First of all, people forget about the A, NASA, aeronautics. One of the most important things we do is aviation safety and designing new wings and airfoil segments. And we've been involved in the history of that, probably going back to the 30s when NASA was created from the National Advisory Council on Aeronautics, which dealt with civil aviation. So we still do all that. Yeah, like out at Edwards Air Force Base, the Armstrong Flight Facility there, we do a lot of flight testing of high-performance aircraft and lifting bodies. Our Wallops Flight Facility off Wallops Island, Virginia, we have a big sounding rocket program and balloon program. Here at Goddard, we do Earth and space science primarily. We build spacecraft like the James Webb Space Telescope, which is supposed to go up in 2018, is being built in a clean room here. All the deep space missions like New Horizons that went out to Pluto and all that, they were built here, even though they're controlled from the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. And of course, everybody knows about the Human Spaceflight Program. Yeah, we do a ton of Earth science here, and it's so important. Climate change is just huge here. Not to mention all the engineering stuff to support these spacecrafts. The scientists will say, well, we need to do this and this, and then the engineers will basically design and build the spacecraft with the help of contractor support. So there are jobs with lots of contractors as well as with the government.
Do you know how many people work at Goddard? I know it's a huge facility.
Used to be bigger. Yeah, maybe about 8,000, I guess. Maybe about 3,000 are civil servants, and the rest are contractors. Some of the big aerospace companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing are here, and just a whole bunch, Northrop Grumman, and a lot of little companies, too.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is employment opportunities at NASA, and in particular, we'll be talking about the internship program for high school, college, and graduate students that they run.
We were particularly excited that you contacted us and asked us to do an episode on some of your internship programs today because, you know, being blind myself and both of us being retired physicists, we're particularly interested in science. And we know that science can be done by the visually impaired, and there are plenty of great job opportunities. And so we want to discuss some of those opportunities with you. And in particular, you brought to our attention these internship programs for students. Can you give us an overview of what these programs are about?
Yes. We start receiving applications in November and it closes in March. That's the period of time for people to apply. But it's really from junior and seniors, mostly at the university level. But also we have for high school students in their junior and senior years. And for the high schools, they have to live in 50 miles radius of our center. And for the undergrad and graduate students, they can come from anywhere in the U.S.
We have an international audience. Do you need to be a U.S. citizen to participate, or can other people also participate?
What happens with international students is that we need more time to be able to go through all the security things that we have to do to be able to enter the center. And that takes from 3 to 6 months to clear. So for their cases, we call it an experiential learning opportunity, and is no money involved for international students, while the national students receive a stipend to come to Goddard and do 6 weeks or 10 weeks or internship.
And the length depends on how old the student is, right?
Correct.
We don't have a maximum age for students either.
But the high school student program is the 6 week program, and then the college and graduate student program is the 10 week program?
Right.
And sometimes it can be extended for graduate students depending on the mentor that is working with them.
And I just wanted to make it clear to people that for people who are hearing this program now and they think it might be too late to apply, or maybe they just want to think about it, these programs run every year around this time of year, right?
That's right.
Every year, and is during the fall, the spring, and the summer. So it's not necessarily late to apply right now.
But the summer is our biggest season, obviously. We might get, what, about 400 in the summer?
489.
At Goddard, and then in the fall, what do we get, like 13, 14?
20.
20? So, I mean, it's what you'd expect, because that's, you know, the summer is when a lot of people are free to do this.
But in the experiential learning opportunity, which again is no stipend, it could be any time, any length of time during the whole year.
So Ken gave a brief overview of what fields NASA works in. Are these internships available in any of those fields, or just specific ones, or what?
Is open in any of the fields that Ken gave you. The only thing is that sometimes it's more specific depending on the year and what is our interest during that year. So we bring students with that expertise to help us here.
I should say also that the internships are available at all NASA centers around the country, not just Goddard, but we have the most internships because we are the biggest center. So that's what you'll find. But if, say, someone's interested in biomedicine or something, they should probably go to Johnson and, you know, look there in Houston, Texas.
So you guys are located in Greenbelt, Maryland, and you mentioned that depending on the field of interest, people might want to go to a different NASA installation. Can you list a few of the other major installations where people might be able to do an internship?
You have Johnson in Houston,
which would be oriented towards human space flight.
You have Kennedy in Florida,
which, of course, is, everybody knows, is our basically our launch facility.
JPL in California.
They handle the deep space missions and deep space tracking.
We have Marshall in Alabama.
They deal with large structures and propulsions. For example, for the shuttle, they did the solid rocket motors and the external tank.
So pretty much all around the country. And you have a FAQ, or frequently asked questions, document that you sent us, and it's got a much longer list, including some of your smaller facilities.
Correct.
Yep.
Now, these programs, as I understand it, are open to everybody, but you're trying to encourage the disabled particularly to apply for these programs, as they're underrepresented in many fields. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. It's just our regular internship program. And we're just making a concerted effort to get more students with disabilities into the program. So what happened is that when a student applies and fills out the online application, everything is online, no paper. There's a demographic section where they can disclose their disability if they wish and any reasonable accommodations. what happens is the mentors who are involved in selecting do not see any of that demographic information. They don't see disability. They don't see race, gender, any of that. We do in the education office. And the reason we want to know the disability is, well, twofold. One, we want to see how well we're doing. And more importantly, we want to be able to provide reasonable accommodation should the person need it. If they need a screen reader or a braille embosser or a braille display, when they show up, it's too late to obviously get that for them. If it's only a 6 or 10 week internship, by the time we get it, it's gone, because it takes the government, you know, quite a while to procure stuff like that. So that would be done by our EEO, our Equal Employment Opportunity Programs Office. They would provide the reasonable accommodation. We are committed to doing that.
So essentially what you're saying then is the decisions to be accepted into this program are made independent and without knowing about anyone's disability. But if a disabled person is accepted into the program, that you can provide the accommodations necessary to perform their job functions at an adequate level.
Correct.
That's great.
That's basically it. So there you are. They are competing against sighted people. We do have a minimum GPA of 3.0, because you can imagine everybody wants these internships. We had about, 6,000 applicants last summer?
Yes.
For about 489 positions. And that varies, of course, the number of internships, because, you know, the mentors who are engineers and scientists, they decide they want an intern. They put what we call an internship opportunity into the website, the one-stop shopping initiative, and then the students can browse for that and apply for it.
Do students apply to the program in general or directly for specific openings?
It's a two-step process. They fill out the main application, and then they have to apply to specific opportunities, and a lot of students miss that. And what happens if you just do the basic application is you're in the system and you've applied, but you're not going to show up in a mentor's account for their opportunity. And they're so busy with their work, they're probably not going to look for a student who doesn't apply to the specific opportunity.
So like many other things in life, you have to be careful about the details when you're applying.
Yep.
And when you use the term mentor, you're talking about a scientist who works at NASA and has their own laboratory, and the student will be working in this laboratory alongside with the mentor and some of the peers.
Correct. It could be a scientist and it could be an engineer. It depends on the field that they are coming in. It could be in business, because we have business, and also in the outreach sector. So it's kind of open. It's not only science and engineering. We have other human resources. We have businesses and things like that going on here.
I've found a few law interns for our legal office too, but we focus on STEM because that's mostly what we do.
And not just aeronautics and astrophysics, but all sorts of different branches of STEM.
Yes. Heliophysics, Earth science, those are our fields here. Planetary.
Cosmology, too.
That sounds like it could be a lot of fun and a very rewarding experience and a great stepping stone towards a career in one of the sciences.
Definitely. They have the opportunity to learn a lot and to exchange with the scientists and engineers and really have a rewarding experience when they leave. And for the most part, they want to come back.
It's also, you know, sometimes we get people in here. I always tell them, the students, this, that sometimes they find they really don't like this work, and it's better to learn it now than before they invest in a whole degree in it and get into a career and then they're kind of stuck. So that's an important thing to learn. And sometimes they know they like STEM, but they'll come back multiple summers and try internships in different fields to see what they like. So it's a way to get experience, to get known, to, you know, to try it out.
Oh, internships are so important. Our kids both thought they wanted to go into science. And they each had a summer internship after their first year of college. And they each realized in short order that that was not the field for them. And thank goodness they decided that early enough that they could change their career path. And so, whereas, you know, we're very enthusiastic about encouraging people to go into STEM fields and major in STEM departments and then go on for a STEM career. If it's not for you, it's just not for you. And it's good to be able to learn that sooner rather than later.
That's definitely why we maintain this internship going. So like that, students can have the experience and find out early on, yes, I like this and I'm going to keep with it. Or maybe I should change into earth science from planetary, for example, and have a rewarding career.
So tell us a little bit about what these internships are like. When a student gets accepted, what happens and where do they go and what are they likely to be doing?
The undergrad and graduate starts the first week in June, depending on that first Monday, whatever date is that. And then they end the second week in August. So they arrive, they have their orientation, and they meet their mentor, and they can talk to those mentors before arriving because we can connect them with the mentor. And during their stay here, they have a regular work schedule, and that's organized with their mentors. Some mentors arrive at 7, and some students are here from 7 to 3:30 or 4 o'clock, others at 9. 8, 10, it depends. We have that flexibility that it goes in accordance with the mentor's schedule. They live close to the campus in the College Park area, mostly because that's where the University of Maryland is and is the best place to find lodging for them. They have several activities, extracurricular activities that they can do inside of the center, a lot of lectures that they attend, social type of luncheon. So they meet each other and meet other mentors. And we have one career day for those that are almost to the point of graduate and to seek opportunities of employment with our contractors in the area. Or if there is some open possibilities at, as a government employee, then that is offered too.
Do a lot of the interns stay on after they graduate with long-term employment?
I would not say a lot, but every year we have at least 10 that stay.
It's pretty common, I'd say, for interns to come back for multiple years, too.
Correct.
If a mentor likes them, you know, they'll just keep applying and keep coming back through their undergraduate and graduate career. And, you know, if you have this on your resume, it really helps you get a job anywhere in the aerospace or STEM fields. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we've been talking about internships and opportunities for students at NASA, but can you put this a little bit in the broader perspective of NASA's commitment to hiring people with disabilities?
Well, we have a 2%, you know, hiring goal for people with disabilities. And, you know, internships are very important along this line because it gears people for employment. This is a work setting. And while, yes, we want to hire people at NASA with disabilities because the government's committed to that, we also want to get people hired out in the private sector as well. Because remember, a lot of government work is contracted out. Most of it is. So there's lots of jobs in the private sector as well. So the general thrust is towards employment in general, but we definitely are looking to hire people with disabilities. And we try. It's hard because, as you know, a lot of teachers in the schools and discourage it. It's low expectations. So that's what we're trying to change here.
So I'd just like to add from personal observation that NASA's commitment to hiring people with disabilities is not new. My first job out of college, which was 40 years ago, was at Goddard.
Really?
I was only there for about 6 months before I left town and went to graduate school in Chicago. So how many people did I meet there? But we had a blind computer programmer in the solar science department that I was working in, and all of the people operating the computer center were deaf, which was a perfect fit because it was incredibly loud in there back in the day with the mainframes, and they could sign to each other and not get headaches from the noise. And so you saw people with disabilities in the workplace, and it was just normal to have coworkers who might have had some sort of physical impairment, but it didn't limit their performance on the job.
Definitely.
Now, yeah.
Now for this week's final item, how you can learn more about internships and other employment opportunities at the U.S. National Aeronautics and Space Administration, or NASA, including how you can apply for these.
So if people want to find out more about these internships and opportunities, where would they go?
Well, they can email me if they need want more information at Kenneth, K-E-N-N-E-T-H, .A.Silberman, S-I-L, B as in boy, E-R-M-A-N, at NASA.gov, or they can apply at intern.NASA.gov, and that's intern with a singular, not interns, but intern.NASA.gov. A lot of people make that mistake. That's where you apply. That's where the information is.
Is there a phone number where people can reach you?
I can give my phone number for students with disabilities. I'm at 301-286-9281. That's 301-286-9281 in the Eastern Time Zone.
And mine is 301-286-6949.
And we asked them about their social media presence, and there were so many Facebook and Twitter feeds that they couldn't list them all precisely, but we'll have all of that in the show notes for this episode.
And as our regular listeners know, we have all of that contact information every week in our show notes. Just look for phone numbers and URLs, etc. And in addition, we'll have links and other resources in the show about finding jobs and more questions you might have about the opportunities at NASA. You know, you can also use the search tool, as I've mentioned, to look for shows about specific topics in the sciences or mathematics or education or employment, and just use those search terms and find some interesting shows. Just go to www.eyesonsuccess.net for all of that.
That's it for show number 1704. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking with Shelley Brisbane, author of the recently published book, iOS Access for All, The Comprehensive Guide to Accessibility for iPad, iPhone, and iPod Touch. This book is an excellent reference guide to accessibility features in iOS devices, and it also provides step-by-step instructions for using these features with many popular apps. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.